If I weren't so afraid of heights, I'd be on the roof now, and the plaster would be starting to fall down for a visual effect this morning. But I figured the trustees wouldn't be too happy with me. I loved this story as a child. I remember my Sunday school teacher explaining to me, though, that back then the houses were made a lot different than they are today, and so making a hole and having it repaired wasn't quite the thing that it would be today. However, a hole is still a hole in a roof. And I presume that Jesus was maybe wondering how this hole was going to get fixed. The story seems to imply that it was Jesus' own house that was being torn apart here. I love that this paralyzed man was blessed to have friends who cared enough to take the risk on his behalf. He needed them. But there was something, I think, that he offered them that made them realize that they needed their friend on this mat. Even though he needed so much care, and I think he probably gave them gifts that no one else could. And I wonder if the nameless paralyzed one needed his friends to maintain hope that there might be liberation someday for him. We are sometimes, I believe, paralyzed as well. Paralyzed with fear of what's happening in our world, paralyzed with rage or despair. At least I'll name that for myself. And then I find that on occasion I come to this place in this hour, and I enter into worship. I sing the songs. I hear the scriptures. I hear gracious laughter. I feel the angst of our common grief at times. And then I realize I'm being carried by you to Jesus. Mary and I meet regularly with a table fellowship group. We eat. We use the same liturgy each time, and the liturgy revolves around the meal. We sing, we pray, we share, we light candles for the world, for ourselves, for the needs of the world. There's a part of the ritual where we go around the circle and we all take turns. And the liturgy goes like this. We turn to a specific person and we say, "I need you, Mary." And Mary responds, "And I need you." And that's repeated with each person as we go around the circle. And I thought that would be, I think, a very healthy thing to do with us in worship. It would take some time, but maybe it would be time well spent. For I hope that you know that just as that paralyzed man knew that he was needed, and likely he knew as well that he needed his friends. And on this Anabaptist World Fellowship Sunday, we remind ourselves again that we need each other. We need our siblings around the world and in this land. We need those who are speaking different languages that we don't understand, that we stumble along to follow, whose ways are so different and like our own. We need them and they need us. We need them to tell us who we are, how they see us from their perspective, and to learn and grow together. What brought that crowd together and what brings us together around the globe this morning and other times that we worship is that we come to see Jesus. That's the commonality. That's the thing that brings us together. We come expectantly. We come to be touched, to be healed, to be empowered, to live in this wonderful and troubled world. But as I reflected on this text, it wasn't so much those things of needing to be needed and needing others that stood out to me this time in the reading of it. What stood out to me, which is obvious in the text, but that I hadn't really focused on a lot in the past, was the crowd. Jesus was speaking the word, and the crowd was in the house, and they were sitting listening to Jesus teach and preach. And the paralyzed man and his friends couldn't even get into the door. But these weren't just any people in the crowd around Jesus. These were the religious folks. These were the people who studied the scriptures. They were the ones who were there to hear from Jesus what he had to say. They were the professional religious experts. They had given their lives to their faith. In other words, these scribes and those on the inside were not only on the inside of Jesus' house, but they were the insiders of the faith. They had heard enough about Jesus to come inside his house. They were patiently listening to his words, hoping to gain some insight on the scriptures that they might have been studying that day. And I wondered, oh, is that us? We came this morning to listen to Jesus. Not everyone in town got up this morning, got out of bed, and got to the trouble of coming to hear Jesus. Who are the insiders? We are the insiders, the inner circle, the disciples of the Master. The story says that these good, full-time, religious, theologically informed, dedicated people like us, quite unintentionally, keep a person from coming to Jesus. I thought about this story again in light of what Sunday it is that we're celebrating. And I'm well aware that our ancestors, those good, well-intentioned folks who loved Jesus, were among those who unwittingly kept others from Jesus. We're all well aware of their mistakes of the past, where they thought that following Jesus meant dressing a certain way or worshiping in a certain way that was known and loved to them and exporting that way around the world through mission efforts. Mennonite Board of Missions sent Ed and Irene Weaver to India. Irene had been born in India in 1910. And early on in their assignment, Irene overheard an Indian woman saying that, quote, "Living in a white prince's house must be what it's like to be in heaven." And Irene writes, "Those words burn shame into my soul. And I began to question many things. I decided my strategy of work in a foreign country would be different from anything I had experienced before." And Ed and Irene were trailblazers. They faced much criticism here at home by churches and by Christians who questioned them for not insisting that Indian pastors wear the plain coat or not demanding that the women wear the head covering in India. But Weavers held fast, developing what they called an incarnational approach to mission, respecting local culture, values, and patterns, entrusting leadership to local leaders even when there were many problems, when other missionaries held the power and decision making. And they moved into a simple house while their colleagues from other religious traditions lived in walled compounds. And the Weavers, toward the end of their ministry year, served in West Africa, and that's where I intersected with their influence. They had already been long gone by the time I came to Ghana, but their influence was still very present. Because in West Africa, rather than planting Mennonite churches, they worked with independent African churches, believing that there was not another need for one more denomination in West Africa, but rather what the need was for local churches to be trained, have their leaders trained, local culture be respected, believing that West African culture had so much to teach. us. And the weavers not only expected that the gospel would change the people that they were ministering with, but that the gospel would change them as well. And it did as they interacted with the Ghanaian church. I had to smile at Irene's description of that, and I just want to read it. I sat glued to the bamboo bench, the most unhappy woman there, she says as she remembers a Ghanaian worship experience. They wondered why I couldn't feel free to dance with them. I'm sure they were ready to chalk me off as missionary impossible. Then one special time, an old woman came up beside me, put her hand under my arm, and gently pulled me to my feet. I could see the question in her eyes. Why can't you share our joy? I said to myself, this will be the end of you, Irene Weaver. It was, she says. I was freed to be one of them. We danced and clapped with a new feeling of oneness. This was how God showed me that there is more than one way to worship. I believe one of the challenges for all of us is to be able to become aware of the blinders we all have that keep us from seeing Jesus and from having other people see and come to Jesus. That man on the mat was a beloved child of God. Jesus saw him that way and responded. And I wonder how do our cultural, religious, theological, political assumptions about the way the world should be get in the way of others coming to Jesus. To relate the experience of another present-day worker of Mennonite Mission Network, Catherine and Samuel Smith Dirksen. They've been working with Mennonite Mission Network in South Africa for a number of years, working in peace-building across generations and their whole reconciliation process. I listened to a sermon they preached at Seattle Mennonite Church. And they said that they often tell people about the church in North America, the white church in North America, as Afrikaners want to know about us. And there are three things that they said that are not very flattering, but that I feel like we need to know. First, the white church in North America doesn't know everything. In fact, we get a lot wrong. But often the white church, including the Mennonite church, has arrogantly assumed that we are right and others wrong. Take, for example, our peace witness, which we've been very proud of as a people, and rightly so. But it's perceived as something that we're good at talking about, but not very good at practicing when they see the division within Mennonite Church USA. Has our arrogance kept others from Jesus? A second observation is that the church in North America is often unhappy, selfish, and fearful, and has a hard time trusting God. Expressed in fear that make white churches afraid of losing power, suspicious of immigrants, and too easily we buy into the narrative of American capitalism that continues to widen the gap between the rich and the rest of the world, and we're perceived as the rich. This keeps others from Jesus. And third, while everyone is broken by sin, but if our society and churches live as if we don't need to be forgiven and don't acknowledge our sin. That brokenness roots continue to go deeper and deeper. With examples like racism, with examples that I could go on and on naming. Now, why do the Dirksons say this? Because they believe that it's important for all of us, if we are to really be a community around the globe, to be honest with each other. In that honesty, the first thing is to acknowledge our brokenness, to acknowledge how we might be perceived in other cultures, to begin to remove the barriers that might be present for others to come to Jesus, for us to truly need each other. And like me, you know people in your own lives, perhaps in your own family, who don't want to be around Jesus. They've had a bad experience with the church as a child. They've gone to college, perhaps. They've taken a religion course. They have big doubts. Those doubts were not resolved in their churches. They were silenced. So they sleep in on Sundays. And as a pastor, as one who's given most of my adult life to caring for and worrying about the church, I hate to say this, but it's true that in my experience that the primary reason that people give me for not following Jesus, for not embracing the Christian faith, is their past experiences and perceptions of the church. And sometimes when they describe that to me, I say, well, that's not my experience. There has been some of my experience, but it's not my current experience. Because I'm sure we have our own blinders here at PMC, and it would be healthy and worthwhile for us to honestly look at that together. Yet I am proud that this church is quick to recognize our national and even our Christian sins. Where sometimes we equate a specific religion and political persuasion, be it right or left, to the gospel of Christ. Here we value our openness to people of other faith traditions, believing that they have something to teach us and we them. That sometimes we are the ones that are on the mat that need to be carried to Jesus, and sometimes other folks are. We welcome those who question faith, who have no faith, who need to come to Jesus. Let's remember we follow the one who heals, who told this man to get up and go home, who brought him to his God and our God, the one who forgives and liberates. We follow the one who likely said, I don't care about my roof. I'm here to raise the dead. I'm here not to worry about roofing matters. And the crowd was all clustered there, and they saw this, and I think probably with one voice they said, we've never seen anything like this before. We've never seen one who wants to reach out beyond the inner circle to embrace others. We've never seen one who takes delight in roofs and creativity of someone who will have such passion to bring others to Christ. We've never seen a teacher who demanded that the students move away from him, move out of the house so that others with greater needs can get into the house. We've never seen anything like this. And today we stand with our Anabaptist siblings from around the globe saying that we need them, and hearing them echo back to us, and we need you. Amen.